Hello and welcome to In Wisconsin. I'm Patty Lowe. Each week, we bring you stories about the people, places, and issues in our state. This week, as Halloween approaches, enter the amazing world of bats, tens of thousands of bats. But a slow-moving menace is threatening these creatures of the night. Then follow the money in the Fox River PCB cleanup project. And find out what on earth this former UW Board of Regents president is doing with a coat hanger. That's coming up in Wisconsin.
Major funding for In Wisconsin is provided by the people of Alliant Energy, who brings safe, reliable, and environmentally friendly energy to keep homes, neighborhoods, and life in Wisconsin running smoothly. Alliant Energy, offering energy-saving ideas on the web. UW Health, providing specialty and primary care for all ages throughout Wisconsin. Information on UW Health physicians and clinics and on University of Wisconsin Hospital is available on the web. Wisconsin's Technical Colleges, providing local education for the crucial occupations essential to our communities. Wisconsin's Technical Colleges, communities first.
Halloween is full of scary images, ghoulish monsters, hissing black cats, and bats on the wing. Most of us don't worry about the world of make-believe, but in real life, bats send many people scurrying for cover. Not Dave Riddell. 2 years ago, we told you about Riddell's research on bats. Since then, he's been focusing on a new threat to bats in Wisconsin, a threat that kills. Producer Joanne Garrett once again joins Riddell on a nighttime research mission.
The echolocation speeds up so fast it just sounds like a little buzz.
It's not a lot known about bats, so anything you do with them is new information.
New information.
They're all sitting. They're pretty relaxed right now.
When last we saw researcher Dave Riddell and his subjects, Riddell was toting only light tags.
So this is a little brown female.
And you can see we're getting into
a laptop.
A different shape and frequency. And this is likely the big brown bat.
Single-handedly, this graduate student in wildlife ecology at the University of Wisconsin in Madison attempted to capture bats.
You can hear them going by now. It picks up the bat's echolocation as they fly by like that one.
And catalog bat calls.
There's three pieces to the echolocation.
Calls pitched high above our human hearing.
A search phase, and then a pursuit, and then a capture.
Also, Riddell could ID bat species and monitor behavior. When we caught up with Riddell in 2003, he took us to a rare place, a bat haven, through a highway culvert to an old abandoned iron mine in the southern part of the state. It's a hibernaculum, one of the largest in the Midwest, where tens of thousands of bats make their winter home.
It's become a really great place for bats to hibernate. It's 100% humidity.
Population, about 143,000 bats. Riddell counted them as part of his research.
You know, what you don't see, you usually ignore. People rarely see bats. They really don't know what good they do on the landscape. All the bats in Wisconsin are insect eaters, so they eat a large quantity of insects per night.
A single one of these agile hunters chows down anywhere from 1,600 to 6,000 mosquitoes in a night. The math is stunning, and mosquitoes aren't the only item that bats eat.
Many of them are crop pests in terms of human economy. The more bats on the landscape eating the bugs, the fewer pesticides you have to spray, and I think economically they're quite beneficial.
Riddell still works the night shift, but Dr. Riddell now works for the DNR, supported by grants that he garners. Riddell is now the state's first bat ecologist.
Angela is checking the guidelines.
Riddell has a crew now and much more sophisticated equipment. Think of it as a bigger technological net. For example, some of his ultrasound detectors are now strung on towers. It allows him to track bats at different altitudes.
And this one's at 2 meters. That one's at 22 meters, or roughly the tower's about 73 feet tall. We don't really have a lot of information on what goes on in the landscape, so we're trying to fill in some of those gaps of what altitude do these bats migrate at, forage and commute, is there differences?
And the pressure is on because of a growing threat on the Wisconsin landscape, wind farms. The number of wind farms in the state is growing and includes a project by the Butler Ridge Wind Farm that will be sited in Dodge County, near the Hibernaculum, the state's most concentrated population of bats. Turbines like these are a boon to renewable energy, but studies have shown a tie to bat mortality. These agile flyers can be taken down by the turbines.
Why are they hitting them? Some people studying the physics of sound and echolocation are looking at the curvature of the blades, figuring out what the returning echo looks like, the movement, are they hitting the blades, the turbulence behind it. It could be an attraction, maybe associated with weather or insect events or some other factor that's easily predicted. You know, once we figure out it, like seeing a trick, you know, it's baffling at first, but once you figure it out, then it's pretty easy. So hopefully it's something real simple.
It's baffling because bats are such great aviators, able to dodge trees and branches and other bats with ease.
You put up a mist net, and a lot of times you watch them, you know, it's complete dark, I'll walk right into it. But, you know, a bat flying at, you know, full speed will at the last second, a few inches away, just go like that around it.
To help unravel this mystery, Riddell and crew are in the midst of a study, the first of its kind in the nation. With the cooperation of the wind farm, they will study the bats before and after the building of the wind farm.
There's been 12 studies with wind farms and bats, but they've been all after the wind farms have been built. We really need to see the pre and the post together before you can draw any conclusions for the future. So we're trying to develop tools here to look in the future.
Riddell's research will hopefully lead to some national protocols about where and how to build wind farms that could decrease or eliminate bat mortality, a critical issue as renewables play a bigger role in our nation's energy needs.
We've got some technology at our hands now that we can start learning more about them, whereas in the past we were maybe limited because they're flying at night and it's dark, you can't see them.
You can see their heat signature. And you can follow them as they fly by the edges of a forest through a landscape with radar.
You can see some of the bats are actually trading back and forth in this low valley right here.
It's a mobile radar unit from Panama City, Florida. Basically what it is, it's two radar units, one that spins horizontally and picks up the landscape movement, and then one that's vertical to get the altitude, so you can actually tell at what height the targets are compared to the ground, and then you put the two pieces together, overlay that with our ultrasound detectors, add in some thermal imaging, and hopefully we get a pretty good view of the bat behavior on the landscapes.
Radar, ultrasound, and thermal images. That's how Riddell and crew can see the bats on the landscape and work for their protection. Here's a rare view of their research subjects.
What we've got is the lower exit at the mine. The bats are swarming around the entrance, picking it up with the thermal imaging camera.
The crews return to the site of Riddell's first research, the abandoned iron mine, the Hibernaculum. They've returned during the fall swarm. Riddell estimates tonight's numbers at 50,000.
It's pretty thick down there. There'll be enough bats flying around where you can feel kind of the wind from their wing beats and hear them real close to you. And sometimes they'll, rarely, but you get a little graze of a wing as they cut around you. They continually fascinate me. It's pretty fun. You know, when decisions come up in the future and bats we know may be an issue, we can have the information to start answering some of those questions.
If you're interested in bats, the Department of Natural Resources is organizing a citizen monitoring program that will soon be underway. Check our website for more information. Last week, we reported on the PCB cleanup project underway on the Fox River. The cleanup will remove millions of cubic yards of contaminated sediment from the river between Neenah and Green Bay. The project is expected to take at least a decade and will cost an estimated $600 million. Although the cleanup has begun, who will pay that tab is an ongoing debate. Reporter Art Hackett set out to follow the money.
Researchers have known for years that PCBs are in the Fox River. Around 1980, scientists started seeing birds with deformed beaks and skeletons, birds which fed on fish from the Fox. The Department of Natural Resources pointed fingers at the paper industry. A spokesman for the Wisconsin Paper Council said at the time the paper industry was only a minor contributor.
We have found that PCBs are ubiquitous. They're all over the place.
By the late 1990s, scientists had learned that not all PCBs are alike.
They're almost fingerprintable.
And the PCBs in the Fox River matched those used by paper companies.
We can understand the type of PCB that was used in recycled paper here.
In particular, the first generation of carbonless copy paper.
We believe that they began in the mid-50s with the manufacture of carbonless copy paper.
Two companies made the paper and five companies recycled trimmings and waste paper from those paper companies.
I think we always knew we were the problem.
Dennis Hultgren worked for one of the seven companies, Appleton Papers. He's now an environmental consultant to the paper industry.
The question is, of the seven companies involved, how much of each? And that's still a debate that has to be taken place yet.
The seven paper companies are financially responsible for cleaning up the Fox. They signed a consent decree in 2001 with the state and federal governments. That decree made it possible for the cleanup of the Fox River to begin in the summer of 2005. Little Lake Butamore near Neenah is the first stretch of the river to be dredged. Two of the seven companies are paying $60 million for this part of the cleanup. But the total cost of removing the contaminated sediment from Neenah to Green Bay is estimated at $600 million. The work will take more than 10 years. Some fear it may take longer due to a dispute between the paper mills and their insurance companies.
Think of the seven paper companies as people going out to dinner with their insurance agents. They've already ordered the food. That's the cost of cleaning up the Fox River. The debate is over how they're going to split up the tab. Enter the Wisconsin legislature.
The paper industry is in a competitive squeeze. So we're trying to figure out a way to save money, a legitimate way of saving money through using their insurance policies.
And so was born AB 222, also known as the Fair Claims Bill. Fair claims as in insurance claims. The Fair Claims Bill says the paper company's agreement with the federal government is the same as a lawsuit. Insurance policies normally cover the cost of legal judgments. The Fair Claims Bill passed the Assembly by a 4-vote margin and was passed on to a Senate committee for a hearing.
It is critical that legislation clarifies the insurance industry's obligation to cover damages of general liability policyholders, who in this case are the paper makers.
We want to clean up the Fox.
Jack Kelly is vice president of one of the seven paper companies, Georgia Pacific.
We feel strongly, having bought general liability policies from the insurers over a long period of years, that we are entitled to ask the insurers to come to the table with us and to help pay for the cleanup that they, in their own insurance policies, agreed to pay for.
But environmental groups charged the Fair Claims Bill, which has occupied the time of legislators and paper company officials for 6 months, is itself holding up planning for the rest of the cleanup.
Because it assumes then that the government will go after the insurance companies to get the money. They will fight tooth and nail against that.
The insurance industry did fight tooth and nail. Eric England of the Wisconsin Insurance Alliance argues the Fair Claims Bill would, in effect, rewrite the contracts which determine payments.
This is legislation that at its core is a direct attack on the property and casualty insurance contract.
Insurance normally covers things that happen while the policy is in effect. It's hard to determine exactly when a particular company dumped PCBs into the Fox.
At its core, it says that if I buy coverage for 1 year, the Wisconsin legislature can make it into coverage for 30 years. It's an anathema to who we are and what we do. It scares the dickens out of the full spectrum of the insurance industry.
The Senate hearing on the Fair Claims Bill went on for 7 hours. It was packed with lobbyists for paper companies, insurance companies, and environmental groups.
This is guaranteed full employment for lawyers. This bill is apparently guaranteed full employment for contract lobbyists, but that's peanuts.
Actually, the money spent on lobbyists is more than peanuts. The Wisconsin Ethics Board reported the Fair Claims Bill was the single most lobbied piece of legislation during the first half of 2005. The hours logged by lobbyists were nearly three times those of the nearest competitor. Georgia-Pacific paid lobbyists $337,000. The Insurance Alliance spent more than $400,000.
This is really another example of a battle of special interest groups and lobbying organizations going at it.
Jay Hack is director of Common Cause of Wisconsin. The group follows the role of money in politics.
And that comes at the expense of the attention of legislators who should be paying attention to maybe issues that affect the entire state of Wisconsin.
Ultimately, the Senate committee killed the Fair Claims Bill. Senator John Erpenbach of Middleton voted with the majority.
You're talking about something that the court should have been handling. And I think you were talking about one side wanting to get the weight of the legislature behind it. So when they do go to court, because I think both sides agree they're going to court, one side would be able to stand up and say, well, the state of Wisconsin believes this.
Fair Claims Bill is now dead.
Okay.
So it might be a moot point, but what we were trying to do was expedite, Representative Crawford and myself were trying to expedite the cleanup.
Environmental groups, meanwhile, were happy to see the Fair Claims Bill die. Rebecca Caters of the Clean Water Action Council says the federal Superfund law, which governs the Fox cleanup, is designed to avoid disputes like this.
Under Superfund, the government can present the bill to the seven responsible companies, and it's up to them to work it out with their insurance companies, go to court if necessary. But in the meantime, the work is supposed to be getting done.
The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency can trigger the Superfund option if it feels the paper companies aren't carrying out their obligations under the consent decree. If the consent decree is the good cop, Superfund is the bad cop.
No one likes to have, it's not a good tourist attraction to be designated as a 39-mile stretch of Superfund.
And paper mills felt it was cheaper to do the work under a negotiated settlement.
Private industry steps in and can generally do things a lot cheaper and can get things done without having to go through a lot of the bidding process that the federal government may have to do.
The dredging of Little Lake Butamore continues, and so does the debate over who should pay and the Fair Claims Bill. Paper company lobbyists are now circulating a different version of the measure. The Superfund designation is still a hammer waiting to drop.
We turn now from the world of money and politics to something, well, equally hard to explain. One of Wisconsin's most influential figures has a little-known secret. Well, it's not really secret, but he doesn't broadcast it either. That is, until tonight. As producer Frederica Freiberg has divined, it has to do with two rods like these made of coat hangers.
Call the meeting to order, and I'll ask that the secretary call the roll.
Recently retired, but long-time UW Board of Regents president, Toby Markovich has presided over many important meetings deciding urgent university policy.
And at the end of the day, we make decisions based 100% for the best interest of the University of Wisconsin system. I have never...
The superior trial attorney has friends in high places. Tommy Thompson appointed Markovich to the Board of Regents in 1997.
Do most of these fancy people that you hang around with have any idea that you come out with coat hangers and find water?
I don't think so. I've had enough trouble with those people as it is.
He does what again? At locations across the Northland, like on the Paul and Ginny Walker sheep farm outside Superior, Toby Markovich, man of letters, witches for water. He finds water under the ground using divining rods. With suit coat flapping, his big farm boots trudge slowly toward the spot.
It's strictly taboo.
Oh, here we go. Right here. That was a pretty good strong pull. As you can see, those rods just crossed.
Do that again.
Using what he calls the cheap and easy method, Markovich cuts a coat hanger into two L-shaped pieces to serve as his divining rods.
Boing.
These flower pots cover the working wellhead where Ginny Walker dug for water at Markovich's divine direction.
I talked to enough people, real reputable people like bankers and things, who said, have Toby witch your well. And they told me stories about how they couldn't find water at their houses, and they had Toby come out and he found water for them.
Skeptics abound, of course.
Walk a little slower, I'd say give it...
I gave it a shot. It didn't work.
Some people got it and some people don't.
Don't have it.
You probably don't believe in Santa Claus either, I bet.
What do you attribute that to, your ability? I mean, I tried it. I didn't have it. What is it?
Oh, my good looks and intelligence, probably. I don't have a clue. I have no idea.
But theories about what it is abound, too.
Some people think that the underground subterranean water that flows may create an electrical charge, either positive or negative, that would then, by magnetism, move the rods. I don't know that that's a fact.
I could drill anywhere on the property and get a well.
For most professional well drillers, it's open and shut.
I'd rather rely on what I know, because I know what formations the water comes out of, and I know how to find it. And all us drillers in the area know how to find it that way.
In fact, the unknown surrounding water witching, or dowsing, as it's also known, creates an aura of mysticism that makes many drillers just plain nervous.
Have you ever tried it?
No. I won't touch the sticks.
Why?
Scared of them.
Water dowsing is thought to be as old as biblical days. The term water witching reportedly derived from a dowser's use of sticks pulled off witch hazel trees. But some believe it's more sinister.
A lot of people get really concerned about the witch part of witching. And is it witchcraft? Is it witchcraft?
It said, do you expect me to come in on a broom or something? And... land on the spot.
Or... Well, do you have any other powers?
Yeah, but I don't want to get on camera with those.
For fourth-generation well driller Keith Lynn, this is a serious and sensitive matter. Still, he's ready to extend a branch, if not a stick, to reputable dowsers and work with them.
I've heard of a lot of cases where water dowsers have come in where drillers could not get water. And them stories are out there too. It hasn't happened to me.
In fact, Toby Markovich is batting 1,000. he has successfully divined the spot to dig the well all 75 times he's been called on to witch for water over the past 35 years.
Water.
To each his own.
Indeed.
Boing.
There is an American Society of Dowsers, including a Wisconsin chapter. Toby Markovich is not a member. Next week, we begin a series of special reports on In Wisconsin, a look at the growing problem of methamphetamine. Frederica Freiberg takes us inside the destructive world of meth to see the drug's devastating human toll and the toll on taxpayers' pocketbooks. Here's a preview.
I had to have it to get out of bed. I was addicted.
What were you doing in that garage?
I was cooking meth.
Some people call it the poor man's cocaine.
I think people need to see it. They need to see what really happens, the effects of what really happens to somebody on meth.
Our series on meth begins Thursday, November 3rd. We hope you join us as we explore the problems and solutions. And on a much lighter note, we leave you tonight with an artist's take on the face of Halloween. For In Wisconsin, I'm Patty Lowe. See you next time.
Major funding for In Wisconsin is provided by the people of Alliant Energy, who bring safe, reliable, and environmentally friendly energy to keep homes, neighborhoods, and life in Wisconsin running smoothly. Alliant Energy, offering energy-saving ideas on the web. UW Health, providing specialty and primary care for all ages throughout Wisconsin. Information on UW Health physicians and clinics and on University of Wisconsin Hospital is available on the web. Wisconsin's Technical Colleges, providing the people of Wisconsin with the knowledge and skills they'll need for the economy of tomorrow. Wisconsin's Technical Colleges, communities first.